Welcome to the No Fungi, No Future podcast. In these episodes, we interview experts in the field to gain a deeper understanding of the magical and mysterious networks of mycelia that are all around us, to learn how they impact our lives and the planet. In this episode, we have the second part of our interview with Dr. Kate Ward. Kate is a scientist and dietitian at Stanford University. In this episode, we talk further about her research related to the microbiome, nutrition, and health. So I was wondering also if you had a magic wand or a whole bunch of grant money to do some research in mushrooms and how they affect our health, what would be your areas of interest? What kind of things would you like to, look into specifically about mushrooms?
Yeah, so I'm very biased since I am a nutrition and microbiome scientist. I think it would be quite fascinating to do a larger scale clinical intervention looking at mushroom, supplementation in the diet. So just seeing specifically how these foods can perturb, every food acts on the microbiome in a different way in individuals differently. So if you could give me all the money in the world, it would be quite cool. You could just individually do food by food. But the problem is all of these foods also work together. And so then it still wouldn't answer the question, right? All of these things are very complex. But, that would be one study to add to all the other studies that we have. And you could say, okay, it looks like when you're isolating, the specific type of food, mushrooms, this is what's happening clinically. And how that's relevant. But again, then you'd want to do a bunch of studies with other vegetables and other foods to just line them up and then combinatory with a lot of different foods. And so it all kind of adds to the body of research.
Okay, so let me phrase this in a different way then. So let's say the next president, so we're very close to having a new president, appointed you to be Secretary of Nutrition for the US. So you've got a huge budget, a huge, TV, radio, everything. What kind of things would you do for the population level to sort of really help the health of America?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm very biased. I'm a scientist. I would definitely increase funding for science. And, especially for understudied areas, I really appreciate that there has been a push in the NIH to fund more both nutrition and women's health research. Those are two areas historically. Nutrition was well-funded, now is less well-funded, but women's health has historically been very underfunded. So two areas I would like to see more funding. I think it's just really interesting to think about the microbiome as well in the context of diseases related to women's health. That's an area that I'm very passionate about.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? What sort of diseases do come from women's health?
There have been a lot of ties. So it's the challenging thing about microbiome studies is that you never know whether it's cause or effect, right? So getting at the mechanism is very important. So I really like the two groups that I work with at Stanford, the Gardner and Sonnenberg lab. Often kind of the pipeline is do a clinical study, find, what's happening clinically, and then go back into, cell culture, animal models, to then uncover mechanistically what might be causing that clinical outcome, because you never know, the microbiome, quote unquote, is not a clinical outcome. Those changes, whether it be diversity or certain increase in specific species or decrease in specific species, may come from eating patterns that are associated with clinical, with chronic diseases. So may not be causal, right? A very common example that I like to give is that children with autism often eat in a very, I saw this when I was working at UCSF in the clinical pediatrics world, often eat in a certain way. And so there are a lot of studies, finding that microbiomes of these children are very different. That being said, often these children have very, very limited diets. They're very, very picky about, textures, colors. Is it the diet that's leading to the microbiome, or is the microbiome leading to chronic disease? You cannot parse those things out. So yeah. I would like to fund more research to get at the mechanism so we can better understand, whether these are causal, and it's probably a combination for a lot of different diseases, but, some may be just that the dietary pattern is more limited or is more, strict a certain way. So that's what the microbiome changes. Whereas other diseases may be, especially diseases of digestion, maybe because of mechanism of something going on in the actual local areas where the microbiome exists in our intestines, understanding the mechanisms for that. So it's a very long-winded answer, but I would really like to understand what's going on instead of just having these, cause versus effect arguments.
Yeah. So my previous guest on the podcast, Amelie, she said basically fecal transplants is kind of like the way that seems to be the most effective, and that diet is very, very hard. I'm just wondering on your experience, like, have you seen that diet and, probiotics and those kind of things can move the needle, or how much? Just curious what you've seen.
Yeah, I don't typically recommend probiotics in my practice. I would say there's limited research on very specific and targeted probiotics in the world of treating chronic disease. That being said, I don't typically recommend a just blanket probiotic for individuals looking to increase microbiome diversity because, whether they're not going to stick or whether, you might need probiotic A versus, your friend might need probiotic B. Like, we just don't have enough data to really recommend personalized probiotics at this point. Yeah, there seems to be this such an emerging field and such a nascent field that we need so much more. And I'm really happy that companies are out here, trying to develop these things. But it becomes just a business problem, right, too, because companies need to sell things to make money to continue to do more research. But the general population, maybe isn't quite ready for these, interventions yet with the amount of data that we have.
So really the thing that moves the needle is much more fruits and vegetables.
At this point, I mean, I think the world of fecal transplant is really cool. That is, I think there's a lot of strong research on that. And so that has been, a very, very wonderful therapeutic for a lot of patients. And it will be quite interesting to keep studying this field to understand, what about that? And then eventually, have targeted probiotics that you could, put into someone's intestine at the right location to help treat them. Whereas I'm sure in, however many years, we'll look back and think this was a quite crude treatment, and then we'll have something much better. For the time being, I think it's incredible and it helps so many people. And so I'm really happy to see that this is something that's, continuing to be studied.
So I was wondering if there was a client who came to you, let's say they had something with their microbiome, like an infection or something, and they needed to get themselves back to where they were before. What kind of things would you advise them, as far as their diet that would really be effective for them? What's been your experience?
Yeah, that's a great question. This is a common question that I get from patients, not only patients who, have more common disruption of their, GI, health, but also patients who go on a run of antibiotics or really just curious about microbiome health because they've heard it, in the news or in social media. So usually what I recommend, again, this can be different from person to person, but, generally, we see that increasing in previous studies with both the Sonnenberg and Gardner groups at Stanford, see that, fiber is something that needs to be dosed accordingly to how much fiber someone was eating before. So in the FIFO study that I was talking about previously, people responded to increasing fiber kind of based on their baseline levels. So those who were eating less fiber tend to have a worse response. Who were eating less fiber tend to have a worse response to an increased amount of fiber versus those who had a higher baseline, right? So really titrating up and increasing slowly is important. So I really like to talk about both types of fiber. So, eating a diverse diet can really help make sure that you have access to different types of fiber in the diet. You can get more specific than that, but just for your general education, focus on eating a variety of foods can be really great. And then not ramping it up, going from 0 to 100, in a day is really important. So, if we're saying, I always like to kind of use the guideline of 14 grams per 1,000 calories. So 14 grams of fiber per 1,000 calories, the guidelines for the US at least are around 28 grams for women, 35 for men. That is kind of based on the caloric and the estimated caloric needs of the average man and woman. Those can be very different, based on activity level, based on size. So I kind of like that 14 grams per 1,000 calories better to individualize. That being said, that is the goal. Some people may need to start lower than that. Some people, can go much higher than that, but really slowly ramping up is really important. So that's the long-winded way of saying, don't eat maybe a cup of pulses the day after you've never eaten fiber for the past year. Really ramp it up slowly, be gentle with your body. Another thing that's important is to incorporate fermented foods. So this is a really new area of study. There's a lot of emerging research on this. That being said, there's also not a ton of research on this. This is still an area that we're continuing to understand. We, at least in our groups and other groups that are studying this topic, believe it's not only the actual bugs that are present in the fermented product. So let's say you're looking at a kimchi or sauerkraut. So it'd be not only the microbes that are in that mix, but the metabolites that are secreted during that fermentation process. So, thinking about compounds that might be present with the bug itself. And so when we as people eat this mix that we fermented and all these wonderful bugs have made taste delicious and, you know, a fun addition to our meal, we're also getting the compounds that are byproducts of the fermentation process. So we're now beginning to study, you know, how these things might work together and how, you know, not only the actual bugs themselves can contribute to increasing microbiome diversity, whether it's the actual bugs in the product that are taking residence in the gut, or if they're, you know, somehow changing the makeup of the microbiome in a different way. And then again, whether the metabolites are influencing the microbiome, or if they're not, are they signaling to other, you know, other pathways in the body in ways that we don't understand. So you can see it's very complex and it's hard to study, but really trying our best to parse out the mechanisms of these unknown areas.
We hope you enjoyed this episode featuring our conversation with Dr. Kate Ward. Be sure to look out for our next episode coming out soon, where we will continue this conversation. Until then, be sure to get some healthy mushrooms into your diet. Also, please take a moment to like and subscribe to our channel and drop us any comments. Your feedback is most welcome. Thanks for listening.